Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is June 3rd, 2022, the bright, sunny, and warm day here in Nashville, and it looks like we missed the rain that we were supposed to get last night. Thanks to Ron Trammell and the Cats Tribute Band for our intro music. As we get started today, I wanted to encourage everyone to subscribe to the Mark Fraley Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe there. You will get a notification each time there is a new program. Also, we have an email mailing list. To sign up for this mailing list, go to the website, markfraley.com, and there's a pop-up at the front of the page. Doing this, you will receive an email each time there is a new program. Hey, please sign up. We don't want you to miss anything. There's always a lot going on in the world of outdoor recreation and conservation here in Tennessee. And it seems like the coronavirus pandemic has inspired people even more to get outside and experience outdoor places and parks. And for each outdoor recreation pursuit, there's often a group or many groups engaged in promoting that activity. Hiking and the development of trails and greenways has become a major focus in recent years. And one major development that has been going on over the last few years is the establishment of the Cumberland Trail State Park. This trail will take advantage of the rare beauty to be experienced along the section of East Tennessee where the Ridgeon Valley meets the Cumberland Plateau. Many sections of this trail are open to hikers, while others remain under development. On today's program, we speak with Mike Crowley, Executive Director of the Cumberland Trail Conference. We talked to Mike about the development of the Cumberland Trail and the work of his not-for-profit in assisting the state in making this ambitious project happen. Mike comes to this job after significant experience with the Tennessee State Park Service, and as you will hear, he has a fascinating story about his choice of profession and his entry into the conservation field. And so I hope you'll enjoy this conversation with Mike Crowley. And we will get started right after this brief message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish 6 beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
Mike Crowley, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the invite.
Did I say Crowley or it's Crowley?
Crowley, yes, sir. Yeah, okay. You're not the first and you won't be the last.
Well, you know, I went to high school with some guys in Cincinnati named Crowley. Their family managed the really authentic Irish pub in the Mount Adams section of Cincinnati.
I've actually been there.
Oh, yeah. It's a nice little pub, and it's a dinky little place, but that's the official headquarters of the Hibernians in the Cincinnati area, let me tell you.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
Well, Mike, it's nice to meet you. I don't think we've met before, but I want to talk today about what's going on with the Cumberland Trail and the Cumberland Trail Conference.
Yes, sir.
I understand that you are sort of new to the job as the executive director of the Cumberland Trails Conference,
but
you're not new to conservation work and the Cumberland Trail. So, as we get started, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you got into conservation, what inspired you to be involved in that as a career?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, so I'm Mike Crowley. I'm the executive director for the Cumberland Trails Conference. I've been in this position since January 3rd of this year. Prior to that, out of high school, I grew up in Kentucky. I joined the Navy shortly after high school and got a commission as an officer. They paid for my schooling, which was awesome. I was able to go to Vanderbilt University and get an undergraduate in mechanical engineering.
Wow.
So that was a big perk. And I spent 10 years in the military and decided it was time to try the private sector for a little while. So when I got out, it was actually right during the recession, 2008-2009. So not an ideal time to give up a guaranteed paycheck every month. But I thought, you know, having a Vanderbilt engineering background, working in Tennessee, I would just walk right into a high paying job. But I was pretty naive looking back, but I was able to get on with an engineering firm working with TVA and their Energy Right program. So we were engineering consultants managing that program. And I worked as a mechanical engineer for about 6 years. And during that time, I've got an older son, but my wife and I were starting our family. Okay. And I was just traveling all the time. So I wanted a change of pace. I'd always been interested in conservation, like you mentioned. And that was instilled in me early, being in the Boy Scouts of America. That just fostered my love for recreation and conservation. So actually I was getting on the website for Cedars 11 in State Park, and I was gonna reserve a campsite. I noticed they had a job opening for their manager position. And I thought, well, heck, why not just try this? I thought for sure at some point during the application process, there'd be some qualification or schooling that I didn't have, but I was able to go through it, got my interview, and did not get the job. but I met the people I needed to meet.
Right, right.
6-7 interviews with Tennessee State Parks later, I landed a job at Henry Horton State Park.
All right.
Over in Chapel Hill. Stayed there for about 3 years. Position on the Cumberland Trail came open, and I jumped on that because, East Tennessee is just spectacular. And I worked on the Cumberland Trail a little under 3 years, and this opportunity came up. I'm from Crossville. I'd worked hand in hand with the CTC as a park ranger, so I was really familiar with how they operated and what a positive organization they are. So, and it's a testament to the CTC, honestly. They had been without any sort of formal leadership for 4 to 5 years. And, they had kept the ship afloat. So we've got a solid crew. And I'm just proud to be the new executive director. I hope.
Well, super. Your profile has a lot of characteristics that are common to other people that I've interviewed. And, okay. and one of those things is an association with scouting.
Yes, sir.
Was a very important part of my life growing up, and many of the people that I've spoken with on this program over the years have cited scouting as an important influence in learning the values of conservation and the outdoors.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's where I first was introduced to the idea of leave no trace. And, that's something it's still instilled in me, and something that we preach here.
Is, right.
Take only photos, make it better than it was when you got there.
It doesn't surprise me that you were not hired in the first instance applying for a park manager job, but, being on the other side of the desk on that decision, State Parks is almost always going to promote from within for one of those jobs, as it should be, I think.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I agree.
There might be some exceptions made to that, but they like to have people have some experience with the system. And so you went to work at Horton as a staff ranger there?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah. As a park ranger one. And I don't mind telling you, I gave up about 75% of my salary.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. And then went to the police academy.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I was actually in the first class that we went 12 weeks.
Okay.
So it had been 8 weeks, and then they bumped it to 10. And when we went through, they said, hey, let's throw another 2 weeks on there.
Okay. I wasn't aware that was a thing. So that's interesting.
Yes, sir. Right. Yeah. And they really love park rangers in the police academy.
Well, tell me what you mean.
Well, so they've got all kinds of pet names for us, possum cops, squirrel police. They would just blanketly refer to us all as parks. And, you know, all the other cadets kind of piled on at first. You know, they're like, oh, someone else that we can all make fun of that's not us.
Right.
And then the more we got to know them, they realized, hey, all these guys have bachelor's degrees. And, you know, they've all gone to college. They're doing a job that they love. And then towards the end, the rest of the 12 weeks, they were like, well, how do I become a park ranger?
Exactly. Exactly.
So it was rewarding for sure.
It's one of the best things that's happened in the conservation and parks field, that our rangers now are for the most part college graduates. I think there's still some holdovers, but it has added a dimension to the parks, because along with that, we get specialists like yourself with specific training in biology and zoology and historic preservation and all kinds of fields that you wouldn't have otherwise, and it really adds to the experience that visitors to parks get.
Absolutely, and I kind of took an unconventional route, you know, to become
sure
the
enough.
Ranger. Typically, folks will, even prior to college, they'll come out and volunteer or be what we call a seasonal interpretive ranger.
Exactly.
And, you know, that gets your foot in the door and you can network. I kind of came in with no relevant parks experience. And that was part of the reason it took seven interviews to get me hired on.
But, sure.
But I'm glad it worked out.
Well, then you had the great fortune of working with Bobby Fulcher.
Yes, sir.
For those that don't
still
know,
have the great fortune of working with Bobby Fulcher.
I guess Bob was, I guess, the first park manager of the Cumberland Trail State Park.
I believe so. I believe that's how it went down. You know, and so the Cumberland Trail was actually kind of an idea by a bunch of volunteers, folks like Mac Pritchard, Sam Powell, right. Evan Means, Bob Brown.
Right.
And so the volunteers had kind of led the ship forever. And then, you know, we started getting attention from the governor. And 1998, they deemed it Cumberland Trail State Scenic Trail. So
right.
The state took ownership of it, as I'm sure you know, and Bobby was there from the inception.
Right. And I guess that was, you correct me, which governor's administration was this that was created?
It would be Sundquist.
During the Sundquist administration. Okay. Perhaps one of the only good things that happened in parks during the Sundquist administration.
I think a lot of people share that.
You know, and I don't mean to throw off on him, but we had at that time a very difficult time with the budget in the state of Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
And you know, we were closing facilities, and we were for the only time that I can remember charging admission fees to state parks,
mm-hmm.
And these were changes that were not popular among the park people or among the park users.
Sure.
And so the Cumberland Trail, I guess, is one of those things that happened during his tenure. That carries on and is a testament to thoughtfulness on his part, to some degree.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, that there's a lot of folks that were around during the Sundquist administration, and they're still around, and you can, that scar hasn't healed all the way
right.
yet. You know,
right.
you can definitely sense it. And you know, not to get too off topic, but during the COVID pandemic, we actually closed state parks for a couple weeks. Which again, you know, to the general public is not a popular decision necessarily, but it's important to understand that at that time, especially, we didn't know what we were dealing with. We knew we needed to socially distance one another.
Right.
But our visitation went up astronomically, 800, 900%.
Right.
And it, you know, it was in within everyone's best interest to close parks. But it was difficult, especially being a ranger, having to turn people away.
Right.
And, you know, they don't understand that if I let them go, I have to let everyone.
Sure.
And there's some spots where you physically couldn't distance from one another. So.
Right. And yeah. as the pandemic developed, the parks became a refuge for the people. And as you said, the park visitation was astronomical during those times, and is still carrying yeah. over. Exactly.
Yeah.
For those that are interested, we've talked about Bob Fulcher, and Bob was one of my first interviews in this program. He made his bones as a state park folklorist. And for those that are interested, it'd be worth your while to tune in on that old interview from about 4 years ago to listen to Bob Fulcher talk about his experience capturing some important things about folklore in Tennessee. All right. So we've talked all around the subject, and tell us what is the Cumberland Trail? Now, I would, before we go, if the listeners have an opportunity to get a map in front of them, a map of the state of Tennessee,
exactly.
it might be helpful in understanding what we're talking about.
But we've got an interactive map on our website, CumberlandTrail.org.
Right.
And it's broken in segments. It tells you what sections of the trail are open, which ones are under design. So the Cumberland Trail is the state's only Cumberland Trail state scenic trail. It's a state scenic trail. It's the only one we have. It will be at least 300 miles, including about 30 or 40 miles of interior trails. So 330, 340 miles when we're finished with it. The latest estimate I've gotten and that is out on the street is we have about 250 miles of the 300 already constructed.
Okay.
Some of this trail was built back in the 60s and 70s by volunteers and could probably use some upkeep and some maintenance, but it's already built and constructed. Of the remaining 50, the majority, I think 90%, according to Bobby, is under contract. The remaining 10%.
Under contract to purchase the land? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think it's already been acquired.
Okay.
If I'm remembering correctly. And of the remaining 10%, 70% of that is actually under contract.
So okay.
90% is acquired, 10% remains, 70% of that 10% is under contract.
Okay.
So there's about 30% of holdouts. Being 300 miles, we go through a lot of public and private land. So, you know, it's there's nothing that can force a landowner to let us come through there.
Right.
Sometimes we'll, and when I say we, I still reference the state, but the state will try to purchase the land. The caveat there is the state has to pay fair market value.
Sure.
So then you get folks like the Land Trust for Tennessee or Ten Green will come in, negotiate with the seller, buy it for whatever agreed upon price they have, and then sell it to the state for fair market value.
Right.
Which is, we wouldn't be where we were without those organizations.
So let's before we get too far down.
Sure. I'm sorry, cut out real quick, Mark.
Okay, where does the trail begin and where does it end?
Okay, yeah, easy enough. So the southern terminus is Signal Mountain, Signal Point, down around Chattanooga, around the Georgia line. And it goes at a northeast laterally across the state to the Cumberland Gap up in Kentucky. So I was in Claiborne County yesterday, and it's beautiful up there.
Sure.
The Cumberland Gap is, part of it's a national park, so we're negotiating with those different entities. But of the unconstructed trail we have, the majority of it is in Claiborne and Ray County. And I don't know if you're familiar with Ray County or not, but it's the Spring City Dayton area.
Sure, sure.
And I've been in talks with their county government, and they are ecstatic to get work done there. And they can see the obvious economic boost and the tourism boost that having a through hiking trail will bring. So we, from the southern terminus to the northern terminus, we go through 11 different counties.
Sure.
So that's the direct.
And a lot of there. Up and down.
Absolutely. And so there's a 35 mile range of influence around the trail. And that directly impacts tourism, economic development. And if you incorporate the 35-mile radius, I think it's around 26, 27 counties that the Cumberland Trail
would influence. Touch. Sure.
Yes, sir.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's going to be a huge economic boost for Tennessee tourism. The intention is to alleviate some of the traffic off the Appalachian Trail. And eventually the Cumberland Trail, ideally, will be part of the Great Eastern Trail.
Tell us more about that. Yes.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. So that's, it kind of parallels the Appalachian Trail. I believe it starts in Florida and comes up through Georgia, through Tennessee, through Kentucky. And if I'm not mistaken, it's going to end in New York. So it kind of just parallels right along with the Appalachian Trail. And it, again, the intention is to relieve some of that traffic from the AT. I haven't through hiked it, but just speaking with other hikers, they have to close sections every now and then just for maintenance and just to give the landscape time to heal.
Close sections of the Appalachian Trail?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, having the Great Eastern Trail and specifically the Cumberland Trail will help to divert some of that traffic off and help spread the wealth around.
I noticed on the map that many of the segments of the existing Cumberland Trail are utilizing public lands such as the state forests, Wildlife Resources Agency land,
yes,
federal land, some state park and natural area land, and mm-hmm. they just sort of connect these little segments up through.
Pretty much.
Is there what percentage of the trail is still on private land?
Of the entire trail.
Of what's open today.
What's open? That's a very good question, actually, and it's something I'll have to find out for you, Mark.
Okay.
If just estimating, I would say the majority of the constructed trail is on state or federal land,
right?
Or managed by it's another entity,
a public entity, sure,
yes,
right?
Yeah, it's not really that much private land, to be honest with you, and where it is. We're on the backside of their field. And if the state hadn't purchased the land outright, they'll request an easement. So they'll grant us a 200-foot corridor.
Right.
And, if you build the trail by the specifications, we're only taking up 3 feet of that,
right.
Not counting the backslope. But we have a very minimal impact on the environment, because
right.
that's the very environment that we're trying to highlight. So, it wouldn't make a lot of sense for us to get in there so we do everything by hand. We don't bring machines or anything like that in there.
Right.
And it's a slow, tedious, physically taxing process. But if you're, if you got any experience hiking, you can tell the difference between a hand-built trail and a machine trail. And as a naturalist and a conservationist, I just like the idea of not introducing any pollutants or anything to the
sure.
natural environment.
Sure.
With that said, we do everything by hand.
Right. Well, so, years, I asked the question about the private ownership because years ago when we were trying to establish trails, and I can remember down in South Cumberland trying to establish some trails down there, and there'd be sections where you'd have to cross a private land in order to make the thing feasible. And
right.
a lot of times this was done, but just a handshake with the landowner, which is fine, but that can only go so far. And
yes, sir.
So, a handshake can be withdrawn, as quickly as somebody leaves some beer cans down there.
Absolutely.
And
I could tell you that that's not the case on the CT at all, but
right.
I think I'd be lying to you if I told
sure,
you.
Sure, no, and I guess it would be appropriate to ask: you're trying to move away from that sort of thing and get arrangements formalized. If
yes,
it's not fee simple acquisition, But then maybe the next best thing or the easiest thing is a acquisition of a right of way or an easement, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, and you know, I mean, these landowners are doing everyone else a favor, so we want to make it as convenient for them as possible. So you know, if it's a handshake agreement, that's not best case, but it's an agreement.
Right.
You know, and the hope there is once the trail is established and maintained, that it's going to be there for perpetuity. And you know, if you want to take that handshake away, you're not just going to upset us. You're going to upset all the thru hikers that have come through there. So it kind of puts the onus on them a little bit.
So Mike, let's step back a little bit and let's focus on some of the beauty spots, which are part of what you've got going on and what will be going on.
Yes, sir.
And you mentioned the area around Spring City and this is in basically the Sequatchie Valley area, which in my view and Grassy Cove and all those areas are among the most beautiful places in Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
Talk about what are some of those beauty spot highlights that you've come to know about.
Sure. Yeah. And that was a big reason I loved being a park ranger so much, is just, I got to see all these spots that maybe no one has seen, or maybe no one's seen it for hundreds of years. So I'm from Crosswell, I'm from Cumberland County. So hands down, my favorite spot, at least in Cumberland County, is Black Mountain, the Black Mountain Overlook. It's easily accessible off of Interstate in Crab Orchard, not too far from Ozone Falls, which is another beautiful spot. But those are kind of the popular spots, and they're popular for a reason. They're magnificent. Where we're working right now is down around Spring City in Ray County. And it's, you know, one of the good things about the CT being so long is the terrain, just everything changes from the south to the north. Where we're working right now is boulder fields, and boulders the size of cars that we're trying to move. And my crew is built, I think it's 220, 226 rock steps into a switchback. It made me rethink the pyramids, to be honest. Because if they could do that in 4 weeks with six people, you know, and a handful of volunteers, maybe it's feasible. They could build the pyramids at one point. It's just outstanding what they've done. But we're right along the Piney River there. There are a bunch of beautiful overlooks. One of my favorites is up north. It's McLeod Mountain or Mount Cloud. We have the Chimney Rocks up there. And it's a panoramic view of the entire valley that you couldn't pay money for it. I mean, it's just beautiful, beautiful spot. And, you know, that I go back to being a ranger. One of my favorite things was designing the trail and getting out there and just bushwhacking, trying to find these beautiful spots. And our problem was there's so many that we wanted to highlight. So we weren't lacking for beauty or natural landscape at any
time. So the spot that you're working on now, where you described with the boulders, is that that's a spot that the state has currently owns and
yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing there is I started here in January. As a ranger, I helped design part of that section. Mm-hmm. And I just remember laughing about the poor crews that are going to have to come in there and build it.
Right.
And now it's me and my crew going in there to build it.
And that will be pretty strenuous hiking, I presume.
So it shouldn't be that bad of a hike, honestly. The stairs are strenuous, no doubt. Right. But for the most part, we follow the terrain and the contour. So it's not a lot of pointless up and downs or anything like that. You know, we kind of start low, go up high, stay high, and then eventually come back down the river. And, you know, there's a couple of waterfalls and a couple small drainages that, you know, depend on how much rainwater we have, are waterfalls. And it's beautiful out there. You know, there's rhododendron and laurel everywhere.
So what is this area called the Head of Sequatchie?
Yeah, so the Head of Sequatchie is in, it's in Cumberland County, but it is right on, I believe it's the Bledsoe County line.
Okay.
And so as a ranger, that was where I was stationed. And that's where the official, unofficial state parks headquarters is for the Cumberland Trail. They have another office at Cove Lake State Park, but I think the intention is to move everything to the head of Squatchie eventually. It's a treasure. And if you've never been, do yourself a favor and get down there. It's to see the literal start of a river coming out of the rocks and knowing that it goes 116 miles from there to the Tennessee, to the Mississippi, to the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
It's very rare to be able to see the head of a river, and you know, it's right here in our backyard.
And that area is a trailhead of some sort for the trail itself.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And so we've got Devil Step Hollow Cave down there. It's not open and accessible to public, and for good reason. There are, I believe it's the only cave in the Southeast that has petroglyphs, mud glyphs, and pictographs.
Wow.
In the caves. And these are, we're talking 10 to 40,000 years ago.
Sure.
Dr. Jan Schimmick from the University of Tennessee, he's the cave guru, and he's done extensive studies in there. A gentleman named Brian Alvarez from National Geographic came out and did kind of a virtual reality, augmented reality tour of it. And I'm assuming that's already out, but
Seen that. I would love to see that if there's a link to that available somewhere.
Yeah, if I find it, Mark, I'll send it to you.
Sure.
I saw the rough copy that he was making. He was staying at our lodge, and I was on duty that day, so I went to talk with him. And it is so much longer of a cave than you would ever imagine.
Hmm.
You know, looking at the mouth of the cave, you can tell it's big, but it narrows out and it gets huge in places. And yeah, I'll definitely find that link and send it over to you, because it's just phenomenal.
So where else can you go from the head of the Sequatchie?
That's pretty much it.
Okay.
Well, I take that back, honestly. So Hinge Mountain is very close. And I believe the trail is complete from the head of Sequatchie to Hinge Mountain.
All right.
So just for reference, the head of Sequatchie is not what we call on the trail.
On the main trail, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So it's not main trail. It's a spur trail. But you can access the main trail.
Got it. It sounds to me, if you're looking at the segments that have been broken out along the corridor of the trail, it looks like each of the segments has a couple different places where you can get in, get out, and maybe do a circle trails, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And so as a ranger, I had from Crossville north to Kentucky. So we would go and manage trailheads. I don't know if they designed it this way or if it just worked out this way, but typically between the trailheads, it's 8 to 16 miles. So it's a good day hike or an overnight hike.
I see.
Access coming in. So it's, when it all comes to fruition, and I'm hoping that happens sooner rather than later, it's going to be such a boom for everybody having outfitters and restaurants and hotels. So it's going to be a very positive thing for the whole state when the CT is finished.
So as far as projects that are in the works right now in terms of acquisitions or are there any major projects in the works that people should know about?
So I'm sure that there are.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of some recent ones we did. And just to clarify, and I probably should have done this at the beginning, honestly. So we are the Cumberland Trails Conference.
Right.
Very similar sounding to the Cumberland Trail. But we are actually a nonprofit that works in conjunction with the state. But we are the ones who actually physically build the trail.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, sir. So as far as like land acquisition and, trying to gain accesses in places, that's kind of a joint project between us and the state, but the onus lies on the state.
On the state. Okay.
Yes, sir.
So my question would be more appropriate to ask Bobby Filcher.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
and so
you have made a transition, you know, from being a state employee to being a not-for-profit administrator.
Yes,
tell us about that transition.
Yeah. So that's an excellent question. Actually, just to speak to it, I absolutely love being a park ranger. And, you know, I thought I was going to be here forever. And actually, one of my managers called me when this job came up, and he said, you know, I'm not trying to get rid of you. I don't want this to be awkward, but have you thought about applying for that? I think you'd be really good for it. I was finishing up my master's degree from Tech at the time. And, you know, I had been busy with that and just graduated. So I had some free time. So I started looking into it. And, you know, I thought, okay, well, maybe I can really make a difference on that side of the fence. So just to speak to my my love of being a ranger and how committed I am to this job. Right. The only reason I would ever leave is if I thought I could definitely have a positive impact. I'm in a position now to where I have a voice in conversations about land acquisition, about trail construction. And I'm learning that working for a nonprofit, you feel like you're broke all the time. And that's not a great feeling, but the way we operate is we rely on state contracts to construct trail. That's our primary source of income. And then we're all donations and grants on top of that. The state contracts are beautiful when they work out correctly. So we started this one in January. It'll end August 1st. After August 1st, there's no guarantees. So we have to try to supplement. We have a full-time trail crew of ideally 8 people. I think we fluctuate between 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. It's like I said, it's physically taxing, and it's a lot of work on your body to do this 5 days a week. So people get injured, people take breaks. We average about 5 to 6. When we're not in a contract, we have to supplement their income internally or lay them off, which luckily we've been able to avoid since the CTC's been formed. And it's something I want to continue, obviously.
Right.
But as I mentioned, you know, we've been without any kind of formal leadership for years. So there's a wealth of information here and file after file. Maybe 10% of it is relevant to what we're doing right now. So, you know, my office manager, Savannah Keaton, I kind of stole her from the trail crew. So we still both work part-time out on the trail, but 4 days a week, we're in the office here. If it wasn't for Savannah, I'd be completely lost. She was here before. She knows where all the paperwork is, what the process is. But, you know, unfortunately, a lot of this stuff we're having to reinvent the wheel on, because
mm-hmm.
It just, there'd been no standards in place. So it's rewarding in that aspect that, you know, everything we're doing brand new.
Well, you're building something. There's no question about it.
Absolutely.
You're building the structure and the institution that is necessary to do the job.
Absolutely.
And you all have your own crew, but you, from looking at your posts on social media, sounds like you have a lot of opportunities for college students to come in and,
yes, sir.
And do volunteer type work. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So June 10th and 11th, we have our next volunteer day. It's always going to be the second Saturday of the month. And that's going to be from now on, as long as we're working. The program you're referring to is our alternative spring breakaway program.
There it is. Yeah. That's what I was going for.
So that's every March. And that has been going on, I want to say, 18 years. Obviously, COVID put a hitch in that in 2020, but we brought it back this year. And it's fantastic, fantastic program. These students come here, they give up their spring breaks. We provide room and board for them. This year, they stayed at the head of Squatchy. We had Moss Meals here in Crossville cater for us, made our lives so much easier. And we had a bunch of board members and our advisory committee that would come and volunteer to like cook breakfast or just stay at the lodge with them. Mm-hmm. But this year we had students from University of Central Florida and Michigan State and just a fantastic crew. They didn't know each other at all coming in. By the end of the week, we actually had to cut it short early because that Friday we had a snowstorm coming.
Oh, gee.
Yeah. And with it being 90 degrees out now, it's hard to remember snowstorm.
And where were they working?
They were working at Spring City.
Okay. All right.
Yep. So it was kind of a haul from head of Squatch down there. It took about an hour, and then we'd get everybody grouped up. So we were losing, honestly, about 3 hours a day just traveling to and from the work site. But that's the nature of
the business. That's the nature of the business. Exactly.
Yes, sir.
So you all are a membership organization.
We are, yes.
So let's talk about how members of the public can become members and support your organization.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are always open for donations. Our membership program is another one of the projects that I'm trying to revamp. We've kind of streamlined it as of now. So there's a monetary field that you can donate, or you can just come out and volunteer. And either way, you know, you'd get the same perks.
Okay.
So right now, those include a copy of our Cumberland Odyssey book. And Mark, I don't know if you've got a copy of this or not, but I'll be happy to.
I've not seen that. I would love to see it.
Fantastic book. Some of the best pictures of the CT. And they get in our newsletter, and they'll get discounts and promotions for the programs that we offer. So just for reference, last Saturday I offered a wildflower smartphone photography program. It's a free program. You know, obviously we accept donations, but if you want to know how your smartphone camera works, I'm happy to show you. I'm an avid photographer. I've got a really big expensive camera, but honestly, 90% of the time I'm using my cell phone.
Sure.
It takes almost as great pictures. We're going to do guided hikes. I'd like to get into some adventure recreation, like rappelling, camping, overnight stuff. I had a lot of success at Henry Horton doing the Horton Outdoor Survival School. It was a program that another ranger and I implemented. It was 3 days, two nights. It was a hobby of ours, bushcraft survival.
Right.
And, you know, we had the venue to host it. So it just took the confidence to do it. And we finally got it scheduled. And we had 20 people show up for our first
Fantastic. Party. Fantastic.
And it was terrific. So I'm hoping to implement more of that along with the CTC.
So you think that the programming aspect will help develop the membership support
that
you're looking for?
That's the plan.
Right.
Because, you know, everyone, majority of people would be willing to offer support, I would imagine. But
right. What
are we offering in return?
Sure.
Other than constructing this trail?
Right.
Being a nonprofit, we don't have a ton to offer. So we're trying to do as much in-house as we possibly can just to kind of sweeten the pot a little bit.
Super. So is there a specific dollar figure that a person can send in to become a member, or...
So what we typically do is $20,
okay.
And that's what we offer the books for.
Okay.
So with a $20 donation, you get the book and you become a member.
Okay.
There is a lifetime membership. I think it's $350, but
again,
that's a program I'm revamping. So just stay tuned on that.
Gotcha. Well, you're picking up the reins from a strictly volunteer organization.
Yes, sir.
And sometimes getting things organized like this is it has to be done incrementally, and
absolutely,
you've got many things to work on at the same time. It sounds
yes, sir.
Like.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So as you go out into the various counties, you're meeting public officials. Are they generally supportive of the trail and what you're doing?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. So over the last 2 weeks, I think I've been to 9 of the 11 counties that the Cumberland Trail is going to touch. And, it's an election season right now, so they've got all kinds of stuff going on. But everyone has been gracious enough to schedule a meeting with me and meet with me. And, you know, once I explain who we are and what we do, I couldn't ask for more support. They've been terrific. And you know, it's within everyone's best interest. You know,
right.
We get this trail done, we do it right. You know, we do have competition now. Like I said earlier, we are the only ones doing it by hand. And that kind of puts us, I don't know, it kind of gives them an advantage, honestly, because we have to employ 6 to 8 trail crew, pay for their time, pay for mileage, when you could just as well do that job with a couple of mini X's or bulldozers. What you get is trail that looks like it was done with a mini excavator or a bulldozer. What we offer is sustainable trail done by hand to last for perpetuity.
Right.
So,
so you're meeting with the mayors and county executives, I guess, yes, also with the Chamber of Commerce type people.
Yes, sir. Yep. And I've specifically Ray County. They've been terrific about the Chamber of Commerce, and I'm actually going there not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday to present again. And luckily, I don't mind speaking to folks, and you know, this is stuff I'm passionate about, so I'm always happy to go to speak at these meetings. And if they want to give us money, fantastic.
Super.
You know, if anything, I'm just spreading awareness.
Well, Mike, I wish you the best of luck in getting things organized there, and I feel confident that you're gonna do that and be successful in what you're trying to do there.
Thank you, sir.
And I appreciate you very much agreeing to be with me today.
Absolutely, and, I'm thrilled to do it.
Again, if you're listening and you're interested in the Cumberland Trail, do a search on whatever search engine you use for Cumberland Trail Conference, and you will see a really excellent website, as Mike said, with an interactive map of all the different segments of this trail, starting from Signal Mountain in the south and going up to Cumberland Gap in the north and Kentucky border. It's quite a challenge that you've got ahead of you.
Yes, sir. Yeah. It's going to be worth it, though. It's going to be good to look back and see the whole thing constructed.
Well, Mike, thanks for spending your time with me today.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.